Welcome to the Giving Back is Dead podcast brought to you by Scott Stover. Giving Back is Dead is a progressive open forum for discussing next-gen giving to the arts and sustainable practices for nonprofits. For more information on Scott, myself, and our advisory services, please visit scottstoverinc.com.
Welcome to Giving Back is Dead. We're very happy today to be with Audrey Oh. Welcome, Audrey.
Thank you so much, Scott, for having me.
We're at the beginning of Freeze Week, and we're benefiting from Audrey being here. And actually, Audrey yesterday was doing this incredible talk at sponsored by East West Bank, and the person who moderated it was Michael Govan. It was fantastic, and I enjoyed it enormously.
Thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it. We had a great turnout.
It was incredible. It was really great. It was a nice beginning to Freeze Week, actually. So Audrey, would you tell us a little bit about yourself and about how TR Lab came about?
For sure. So I'm the CEO and co-founder of TR Lab. TR Lab, we're a digital art platform, and our mission is to enable artists, estates, foundations to craft bespoke digital experience with them that enable a next generation of art enthusiasts to get to know them better. And we've been very fortunate to work with Tsai Guoqiang, with the Calder Foundation, with Rhizome, and most recently with the Chris Burton Estate, which is what the talk was about yesterday. But I really fell into TR Lab and thinking about digital art actually through my family's interest in art. My family had founded an art museum in Shanghai called Rockbund Art Museum in 2010.
As you know, I know and I have enormous respect
for Rockbund. Thank you very much. I cannot take credit for any of the work there, but I will try to. But Rockbund is a very special place to me, and I got to grow up there. Tsai was actually our opening artist there.
That I don't remember.
2010.
But maybe I did see it.
I think you must have seen it
did.
In Shanghai. And I was actually a tour guide for the exhibition. It was one of my first summer jobs. And so I was very lucky to get to grow up around parents that appreciate art and grew to appreciate art more myself. But I never thought I would be working in the art world until in 2021, I was going to grad school in New York. I was studying applied analytics at Columbia. And I was interning at a friend's firm, a venture fund that looked at different deals across really a very generalist fund. But one of the sectors was crypto and around how blockchain technologies could influence and how we think about the world. And so I was starting to learn about NFTs and what that meant for digital art. It just so happened that a family friend is the founder of Dragonfly Capital, which is one of Asia's largest crypto funds. And he had come up with the idea around TR Lab, which is a digital art platform that could bridge the digital and traditional art worlds, whatever that meant. And so my family was invited to be a co-incubator for TR Lab, as well as Sing Lee Cohen, who's still a chairman at Christie's, but now also TR Lab's chairwoman, and David Chow, who's the founder of Arto 21. So,
And was that the first project you did was with Rockbund?
The first project we did was with Tsai.
They were the proof of concept.
So yes and no, I would say. I think Rockbund inspired why my family became involved with TR Lab. But what happened after TR Lab was formed was we started talking to Tsai immediately because we've been very close friends with him ever since our exhibition in 2010. And he was interested in doing NFTs. So we started a conversation not knowing where this would go. And then there was no one working full time at TR Lab. I was the first full time employee. And then 3 months after I started, the board approved me to become the CEO. So it was a really... Well, I didn't know how I fell into this role. I feel very proud. I feel privileged. I wasn't that experienced. I had not really worked properly before in the art world. And so it's been a journey figuring things out. And I've been very lucky to have a lot of support along the way.
Okay, well, there's lots to talk about that. So let's begin with the most important question, which is we all see there's been this demise of the NFT market. So how does that impact TR Lab and what you're trying to do? How dependent are you on the market? And then also tell me what you think about the future of the market.
Yes, I think I would say that we are probably slightly impacted by the market in terms of the overall interest around digital art. However, I think the way Tier Lab's been set up, the conversation has always been around art and not around NFTs. NFTs, I think it's simply the medium or the tool that is used to for us to get the art into people's hands or for us to communicate a message from an artist. And so even when we launched our collection and our partnership with the Calder Foundation, for example, it was actually in the dead of the market and a lot of the NFT sales were not going well. But I think because what we're doing has always been educational and very focused on getting people to learn, getting people to participate in free experiences that could lead to purchasing something if you so wish, it did not really impact our sales. So I think, yes, I do think that there are less people interested in NFTs now. I think there's a fear around what it means. There has been a setup story by the media that, hey, like this is, it's about monkeys. It's about these projects that have done really well for people and have made people a lot of money and then have crashed kind of spectacularly. But we've always stayed far away from that. I think we've never tried to incentivize trading. I think it's always been around getting people to learn about art. And that has enabled Tier Labs to still be around, I think, in comparison to some other platforms that I think have done incredibly well, but have not been able to sustain interest over a long time.
See, so basically what I understand, what you've told me about it, which I think is great, is a part of what you really want to do is expand the audience. Expand
yes.
the audience and, as you say, education. So do you have any statistics? Are you expanding the audience? And are there young, do you have any statistics about the generations who actually access the platform and use it?
So one thing that's kind of interesting about the demographics is when people are accessing our platform utilizing a wallet, they're oftentimes we don't know their identity. So there's no ways for us to validate who they may say they are.
I see.
But through anecdotally, I think in across our online channels, especially Discord and the stories that we've heard from our community, I would say people lean towards the younger side, where they're usually in their 20s or 30s. They're people that have an interest in art, but never were able to have access to the art world, where I think the art world's also a place that's quite intimidating if
yes.
you don't have someone taking you in. So I have friends who, you know, will go to the Met once a year to see a blockbuster exhibition because they'll get an advertisement for it on their Instagram. But there is not really a lot of incentive for them to go learn deeper about an artist and to even want to start to think about collecting and what it means to be a patron of the arts. And for me, for Tier Lab, we've been interested in gamifying education. And where I think it's both, yes, like wanting a larger group of people to come in to experience art in a way. And I think for one of the statistics I can share is for Ty, we had done a project with him called Your Daytime Fireworks. I don't think I've shared this with you before, but it was a really interactive project where as a collector, you would purchase a digital firework packet. And then there's an A to Z almanac of Ty's life that included kind of clues and hints around special dates that matter to him, how weather, safety regulations, and all these things can affect his fireworks and how they go off in the physical world. And as a participant, you would actually get to decide over a 45-day Thailander when you would set off your fireworks. And the time that you set it off would ultimately determine the artwork that you have.
I would love to see it.
Yes.
Is there a test thing that we can look at it sometime or not?
Yes.
You can look at it and participate without actually buying it or not.
Well, the Thailander has ended, but you can look at it and participate and see how weather and how different factors that go into Thai's in-person works were factored into how we thought about this digitally. And how we came up with this with Ty was Ty had said to us, like, look, like, he's really wanted people to care more about the medium of his heart and to get to know it better.
Which is dynamic, and how do you get to see it?
Yes.
If you're not actually there, because I've had the the pleasure of actually being actually at more than one. I was at one, I think it was in Doha, a long time ago. He did something in Doha that I was there. And then I was at the big things he did in the Uffizi in Florence, which were spectacular because we were at this platform. Were you there or not?
I wasn't at the one in Uffizi.
You know, you were you were above Florence. You were, and he did all of the fireworks all over. It was unbelievable.
He's really an incredible artist. And but he said to me, he's like, look, I cannot give to someone a packet of gunpowder and say, look, this is how you can experience what it's like to have a better understanding of my craft. Where gunpowder and the materials that I work with are so specialized, where I cannot just give that to people and have them, I cannot have everyone experience my works in person. So how can we utilize the digital medium? How can we utilize NFTs to do that?
It's a great idea. And it's incredible. I want to see it.
You set off the digital firework packet, aka you burn it, and then it transforms into the final firework artwork. And
so exactly his process.
Yes.
You can see his process.
So it was really a collaboration that we had with Ty, where we went back and forth. We were really brainstorming. We had a lot of different ideas about what it meant for him to utilize NFT technology and for him to work in this digital art form. And ultimately, you know, it was a 7,000 edition, and our website crashed. It sold out in 2 minutes.
Incredible.
Which was really incredible. And I've had so many people come up to me and telling me, hey, that they've always been a fan of Ty. They've been an Instagram follower of Ty's, but they never, you know, been able to own a piece of Ty's work or never been able to get to know Ty at a better level. And Ty had hosted studio visits for collectors that had stayed online every single day across the 45 days that Thailander was on to set up a fire packet every day.
Oh, really?
And so he was really engaged with this type of new people that otherwise would not be exposed to his works. And I found that really fascinating.
So he actually had to interact directly? His studio had to interact?
They didn't have to, but they did.
I
think they were interested in seeing how what types of questions were asked, what people, were these the same collectors that he had? And they were mostly collectors that I think otherwise would not have collected Ty's work, had access to Ty's work.
So it confirmed your whole thesis.
Yes.
And so you don't have an idea of what kind of age, was it mostly millennials, was it Generation Z? And do you have any idea of were they Asians or was it everybody?
For Ty, it really was across the world. I would say there was a concentration in the US and in China,
But they're the two biggest markets, so it's kind of coherent.
Yes. And in terms of the collectors that I was able to meet in person, I would say mostly millennial. Yes.
You know, I think, you know, Giving Back is Dead is about the evolving views of giving to the arts and basically how can we engage the next generation. And I'm convinced we have to go to where they are.
Yes.
So this is why I'm particularly interested in talking to you. Do you believe that this kind of platform and NFTs will result in more younger people giving to the arts?
I mean, that's my thesis. I hope so. I'm definitely biased, but I really hope so. We just did an event in Noah House in December with Josh Bear and with Yayoi from the Chris Burden estate. And we had around 200 RSVPs on a random Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people in the crowd were very young. They were, you know, college students. They were just starting work. And there were people that were interested in the arts. And throughout my work with Tierra Lab, I've actually gotten to know, in China, they call them Lingling Ho, like people that are born after the year 2000. That's kind of how people, I think that's the equivalent of Gen Z.
What does it mean, Lingling Ho?
People that were born.
People
that were born after year 2000.
Okay.
And I've gotten to know a lot of people who I've collaborated with, who I've gotten to know because of my work with Tierra Lab. And one example I can give is someone named Jeffrey Liu, who I've grown really close to. And Jeffrey is just graduating from NYU this year, but him alongside a couple of his friends.
And you didn't know him before?
I didn't know him before.
Oh, okay.
I knew him through my work with Tierra Lab. He had founded a Gen Z art community called Still Life when they were in college. So they just decided to found this. They do like an annual art fair in New York. They have a very strong and engaged community. All young people that are interested in working in art. And throughout my conversations with Jeffrey, I also found myself learning a lot, where at first it was just, hey, like Tierra Lab, we wanted to do an event with Still Alive to attract those people, because we believed it fit our target demographic to come to take part in our experiences in our digital partnerships. But as I got to know Jeffrey better, he actually recently became the chair of the Young Patron Council at Ruckman Art Museum, and he's been teaching me about how to better engage in with his generation of really entrepreneurial, really great young thinkers that are, I would argue, more scholarly than the previous generation of collectors in China.
This is
and
great.
That are really making their own path towards thinking about what they want to collect, where it's so different from what their parents have wanted to collect.
Are they mostly interested in buying? Are they mostly interested in the speculative aspect of the art market?
No, not at all. A lot of them have actually studied art in college, and I would say a lot of them are actually a lot more interested in doing curatorial projects. So the number of like apartment shows, the number of collectors or art participants supporting each other and putting on experiences and doing events in support of new spaces and support of artists, I think the focus has actually a lot really been around artists and supporting them and being interested in engaging with artists directly rather than the speculative.
Is the cost of the NFT rather accessible to a lot of people or not? I saw the prices that I saw online were rather modest.
Yes.
So, is that part of your idea?
Yes. Well, it depends on the partnership. When we worked with Calder, the prices were a bit more expensive. They were $8,000 US, but you know, still nothing in comparison to what a Calder would cost. But that was because Sandy, who is the president, he's been the biggest supporter of Tierra Lab, and I'm always so grateful for his trust.
He's one of the visionaries of our field.
Truly, Sandy is.
And the way they set up the foundation is incredible. Everybody has. I mean, he's really the gold standard.
Yes, I love Sandy, and he's been so incredibly supportive of Tierra Lab. And one of the things that Sandy really cared about is that he didn't want people to come in order to buy. He wanted people to come in to learn. So we talked about the pricing where he wanted to be at a level where you didn't feel like you had to go through the experience in order to buy the work, although you could if you wanted to. And it was really much more, the metrics that the foundation was interested in was really much more around like the essays that people had to write in order to join the experience, the time that they were spending.
Were you able to track that people are really reading this? Because I saw there is quite a bit of information on the site.
Yes, the people that were spending time going through the different chapters on the site, looking at the time that they used to get the different badges, how many people got the different badges, what was the average score of the quiz that was part of the experience. So all of that, the foundation actually cared way more about that than what the sales were looking like, because I think to Calder, you know, doing that, it was, to Sandy, it was really nothing about getting sales. It was more so towards interacting with a new audience that would otherwise not know about Calder or know a little bit about Calder.
This is great.
I said this to you yesterday, like Sandy told me the Bob Dylan analogy, and I think about it constantly.
Tell it again.
Because Sandy had said, like, asked me if I knew Bob Dylan, and I said, of course, like, who doesn't know Bob Dylan? And he told me to name 10 Bob Dylan songs, and I could not. And I think, and Sandy had looked at me and he said, and that's why I didn't say yesterday, and he said, look, I don't want in 100 years right now for Calder to be an Calder pieces, Calder mobiles to be an object in the museum that people walk past and they have an idea of what this image means, but they're not interested in getting to know Calder as a person, to know about what led him to making mobiles, to know about his works across time, rather than just a signature image that's in your head, because mobiles have become so iconic. And I feel the same way around doing Burden, because I think Burden is such an artist that has become known for a few things, where Urban Light, Shoot. And I did not know about Burden beyond those works, very frankly speaking. And I was so shocked at the man that I grew to know as the artist, Because if you just look at Burton, you think, oh, it's really amazing that he did Urban Light, but you know nothing about him beyond why he did it and how lampposts have been a theme throughout his work, then you don't actually really know what Burton was trying to do. And
how long did you have to work on this project?
Burton? Yeah, Yoy and I had our first conversation, I think, 2 summers ago, 2021 July.
So it's a long process.
It's been a really long process. But I think that's often the thing for a lot of the partnerships that we do. It's the first conversation started out very broadly because I'm not really interested in offering artists a prescriptive, like, hey, this is what we're going to do for you. In the same way where if another artist foundation came to us and wanted to do a project around on their unrealized works, I think I would look at what those works were, what the artist's intentions were. And with Burden, because it was so clear and he had so many notes, like he really wanted to actualize these projects, it actually made it a lot more of a stronger argument for myself to participate in helping bring these to life in the digital realm. Where, I don't know, if another artist foundation were interested in working with us, it's always a long conversation going back and forth of what we think would be the most interesting thing rather than copying a formula.
And the process of transferring it to a digital format, that's not long?
No, it also...
It seems quite complicated.
Yes, especially because, I mean, for Burden, it was easier in some ways, but also harder because Burden had so many notes that was based on what he wanted the size to be, what he really wanted for it to look like, that it was easier to have a starting point. But we worked closely with Burden's wife, Nancy, and the state, who had many rounds of feedback for what these works were going to be, especially the model that the website is built on, Xanadu, that we had so many iterative sessions for thinking about the landscape, thinking about the way that you can move around the 3D model. All of that took a lot of time.
Well, Michael Govan yesterday talked a lot about that what you're doing is doing a gamification of art. And you mentioned this briefly related to Calder and Tsai as well. But I looked on the site for Chris Burden and I didn't see the gamification side of it. Did I miss something?
So you have to go through the experience.
I didn't see how to go through the experience, actually, I think. It was Xanadu.
Yes. So there is something that says start here. And if you click into it, there are different chapters. And if you start to go through the chapters, you're able to collect badges.
So that's what I didn't get. And the badges are unrelated to actually purchasing an NFT.
Unrelated. They're just there for you to, you know, have evidence that you've gone through the website. They're almost like a star sticker for fun. Well, you know, when kids get a good grade in school, where you can say, like, I'll give you a nice sticker to put on your wall. That's the idea around badges. But with Xanadu, I think it's quite interesting that you say that because Yayoi was very inspired by Legends of Zelda, which is an immersive game. I played it only a few times, so I don't know it well, but my understanding of it is that you walk in a world and there you come across different places where you're able to interact with different things and get points through that way. And so Yayoi, I think, was very interested in the idea of like what it meant to walk into a website, walk into a site, and then participate in a world in a way where there's no chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, but rather
wander.
And if you wanted to follow chapters, you could, but the idea is for you to wander through and for that experience to feel like part of an immersive, calming game.
And is this going to be in virtual reality as well?
So that's something
to me that it's perfect example to have it in virtual reality.
That's definitely something that we've talked to the state about, especially as you know, like the Apple Vision Pro just came out.
Have you tried it?
I've tried it.
What do you think?
Everybody I asked doesn't
like it.
I was wowed by it at first, but I think there's a lot of work that needs to do for the hardware to really become seamless, where it's very heavy. And so
that's a problem.
It's a problem. I wear it for 10 minutes and my head starts to hurt.
This is a problem.
Yes. But I think that around spatial computing, there's a lot of work that has been in progress for ages. And So it's something that we talked to the estate about, where we think about where this project can live in the future. And it's participating in a group show. Xanadu, the Path to Xanadu artwork, is participating in a group show in Korea in either April or May, coming right up. And we think about then also different ways to showcase what we've done. And not just through, you know, events and activations where we tell people about what we have built, but also in different ways to exhibit.
And how does the, I think most of us only know these platforms from Pace Verso. I know Pace Verso has been, I guess, an equity partner, or has contributed to you, is that correct?
Yes.
How do you compare what you do to Pace Verso?
So I'm personally a big fan of Pace Verso. I really love Ariel, who's there, who's the head of Pace Verso. And I think they do really interesting, Pace is especially interested in generative art and in pairing their artists with engineers and coders that are able to expand their art in a new medium. I think we have more been interested in crafting that digital experience around what it means to participate ahead of purchasing an art form. So I think our experiments have more been around the overall experience rather than just the art piece itself.
Can you see a time when you would also have a generative aspect to what you're doing?
Definitely. I think it's something that we've explored. Generative art has been, I think, one of the kind of more consistent through lines in terms of when people think about digital art, because NFTs have actually enabled for generative art to be perceived in a different way. I say that because before, for generative artists, for artists that work with code, the only way for them to sell their artworks is, let's say they would run a series of code and they would have however many outputs from it. They would choose their favorite outputs and, let's say, sell them as prints or editions. But what ArtBlocks did as an NFT platform is that they had the ideas, like, if this is something that is created on the blockchain, could we make it so that the artist would have to have code that makes up their art, that they're so strongly confident in, that they would be happy with whichever output that came out, that they don't get to choose the code, yeah, and the person who's collecting the artwork at the second of purchasing gets to choose what that artwork looks like. And a lot of people, I think, have not understood that around generative art, but that's part of the reason why I think NFTs have been so important for it, because it's blockchain has enabled generative art to be consumed and thought about in a different way than before. And I think Pace Verso has done a really amazing job in pairing Pace's artists, allowing for these artists
to give them an opportunity.
Give them an opportunity to explore in various manners for how they want to think about their art in digital, in the digital world. So I think, Tira, we're interested in it. I think if there are ways for us to participate that makes sense, we'd definitely do it. But I think who the artist is, how we do it, that matters a lot to
us. Sounds great. Very artist-driven. Do you know how to code yourself?
I do a little bit, but I'm not good.
So that permits you to to share a language with these
people. No, I'm not that good.
No? But it permits you to understand what can be done, I assume.
No, not enough. But we have an amazing CTO that has a very strong blockchain and big data background. And that's been really helpful to me to understand how little I know. I know, like, I learned basic R and Python, but I'm not a coder by any means. I wouldn't trust me with any code.
So, you know, as you know, I work on creating foundations and helping foundations. This is what I do. So one of the things I really want to know, one of my missions, is can any of this actually be used by nonprofits, whether it's any kind of arts nonprofit or legacy institutions, to provide an independent revenue stream? Do you see applications for that?
I do. And I think LACMA is a great example of an institution that is willing to experiment in this new world, because I think it's a very different collector cohort, is a very different artist cohort that artists that may have not had been recognized within the art world that we know.
As I think I haven't talked to you about this, but you know, the key is its leader. I mean, Michael is fantastic, and he is really, I think he's one of the visionaries of our times. So I think it has to be, and he's quite convincing when he talks about these things.
Yes, it's hard to say no to Michael.
That's right.
And, but I'm very appreciative of institutions like LACMA that are taking a stance and saying, like, hey, we do think that there's interest in exploring this field. In terms of providing an independent revenue stream, I do think that it allows in a different type of supporters that otherwise may not have been interested in the arts to come and support arts for the first time. And these are people that, you know, maybe like made their money through Silicon Valley or made their money through blockchain and crypto and are very used to being a digital first person where everything that they touch, they want it to be digital first. And so it makes a lot of sense for these people to then become supporters and patrons of digital artworks instead of people that have been,
Just ask them to make a donation, I see. So you think that via some kind of going out to reach them through something digital, such as what you're doing, that permits them become familiar with the arts nonprofit, and then they're likelier to give some kind of support. That's what you think.
Yes. And, you know, we worked with Rhizome, which I think is a fantastic organization that has been
Talk to us about what you've done with them.
So we did a project with Rhizome called Seed, and it was really a project that aimed to trace the history of Rhizome with generative art. Because Rhizome has played such a significant role in the history of digital art, but a lot of people in the space actually don't really know about it. They maybe have heard of Rhizome. Rhizome has supported a lot of artists that have gone on to become pretty successful in this new world, including Raphael Rosendahl. I may be mispronouncing his name, but he's an artist that Rhizome had supported with micro grants early on in his career when he had absolutely no money. Mm-hmm. And after he had made sales through ArtBlocks, the platform I mentioned, he actually donated a majority of his sales portions to Rhizome to thank the institution for their support. And I think he was probably Rhizome's biggest supporter that year as a patron. And so I think there are these new conversations happening where artists are also able to give back to institutions that have supported them in a new way that is enabled by the space, enabled by the new people in the space. And when we worked with Rhizome, the first series that we did was a series called Postcards from Starry Night. Mm-hmm. And Postcards off Starry Night. I don't remember I'm blanking on the preposition. But for the series that we did, it was actually taken from when Rhizome used to be an email newsletter in the 1990s. Mark Tribe, their founder, had participated in the creation of an artwork that really looks as constellations and a different vocabulary and words used across the newsletter. So there are things like dark web, there are things like AI, and it would track visually how these words would appear across the newsletter and the newsletter community. And I thought it was very interesting for us to start within Rhizome's archives to highlight just how present Rhizome was in the very beginning. And we had people who came to support the collection. It sold out fairly quickly within a day or two that were people within the digital art space now that did not know about Rhizome's legacy. And they were saying to us like, oh, this is very interesting for us to now learn about Rhizome. Or there are people that knew about Rhizome before but did not realize just the historical significance that Rhizome has played in the space. And so my hope, and I'm definitely biased, is that ourselves alongside other platforms that do similar work, every single step forward is a step closer to getting these people to be involved in the arts. But I am an arts first person where I am in this space because I like art, not because I like NFTs or technology.
Or speculation, commercial speculation.
Yes.
That I hear. Talk to us now a little bit about your philanthropic activities, your personal philanthropic activities. What do you support and why?
Yeah, so my, aside from Rockbund Art Museum, I am where I'm very involved, and I, every year that goes past, I'm more excited about being involved. Part of the reason is I'm super excited about our new artistic director, X Junoel, who's also a close friend. I just think X is leading the institution down a path that is very exciting.
What is the path?
For example, the spring programming at Rockbund actually will look at the building that Rockbund is born in, where Rockbund Art Museum is part of Rockbund Real Estate. And Rockbund Real Estate is a development project that houses 11 historical buildings, a lot of them from the Art Deco period, the hides of Shanghai in the 1920s. So Rockbund Art Museum, the building actually used to be the Royal Asiatic Society building. The building itself was built to be a museum, and that was part of the inspiration why my parents, my dad had made the decision then to have a museum. Not that we had a clear idea of what it meant to have the responsibility of an institution, but I think thanks to my mom's care and patronage and who she is as a person, she's a very pure lover of art. She's not really a socializing person. She is, but she knows deeply about the arts. She's very scholarly. She's very difficult to travel with because she won't eat the whole day when she's looking at art. So she expects you to be up bright and early, ready to go. She's there when the door opens.
I have another friend who's like that. It's very, very difficult to try. I say, can't we eat something for lunch?
Yes.
Something.
I'm like, food is also part of the artistic experience and expression.
So I have another art friend who's like that, and I have to beg to have some, you know.
My mom won't listen. There's only one meal a day when we go see art. And, but I think Rockbund has been this very special institution because of her support, where we've never interfered with the curatorial team's decisions. We've never said like, hey, like we're friends with this artist or we like this artist and we think that you should do a show.
And you're saying you're very interested in the current director that's just come on.
Yes.
And why? Tell me why. What is he doing?
Well, X is so brilliant. My family has gone to know X because of our relationship with the Guggenheim. So my parents were big supporters of the China After 1989
show. Which of course I saw and has marked all of us as a vision of what's going on.
And X was someone who was actually hired to develop the show at the Guggenheim a couple years back.
I don't think I've met him.
X, it probably was 2015, 2014, mm-hmm. around when they started working for the Guggenheim. And because of my family's support of the Guggenheim, I got to know X really well, and I was part of the YCC, was it the Young Something Council, the Young Collectors Council.
Voila, YCC.
YCC at the Guggenheim, and X was also one of the curators that was working closely with the YCC.
And so, why is it interesting to be a part of that?
I think Guggenheim is an institution that I got to know because of my family. My mom had founded their, I want to say it's like AAC, Asian Art Council.
Yeah,
sorry, all the acronyms are tripping me up. And I think that was in 2017 or 2018. And so Guggenheim, when I moved to New York after I graduated in 2019, was one of the first institutions that I got to know intimately in the city. And so I was at first an honorary member of the YCC because of my mom's support of the Asian Art Council. But as time has gone on, it's been very interesting me to follow, especially with my interest in the digital field. Guggenheim now has a collaboration, a longtime partnership with LG for the next few years. And it's interesting to be so intimately part of a smaller organization in Shanghai that is trying to make our own footprint and figure out where we want to go and what our legacy is, and participate in Guggenheim, which is, you know, has been around forever. That's around maintaining and expanding their legacy.
And it does interest you.
Yes. It's interesting to me to see how their development team works, how they're thinking about their different councils, how they think about the different councils interacting with each other, and how they think about acquisitions. Ruck Bund is not a collecting institution, so we only do shows. We commission for artists to do works, and I'm really excited about X's programming for the upcoming year because it's all around, it's a series of shows that will focus on the history of the building, really digging into archives and enabling artists, contemporary artists, to play around with archives of the history of the building and seeing what conversations happen there. So
archives is something that really interests you. This has come up frequently in our conversation. Archives, archives.
Yes, I was a history major.
So do you think, don't you think that's unusual for millennials? Are you Generation Z?
I'm technically a Zillennial. I was born in 1987, which is technically the first year of a Gen Z. Okay. But I feel in many ways that I'm also more of a Millennial because I did grow up for a couple of years without a smartphone. So I remember what that's like. And I feel like typical Gen Z does not remember what that is like.
I see.
So does
your generation, are they interested really in archives? Are they interested in legacy institutions?
I think maybe that's more of a personal interest for me. I don't know if my generation is that interested. And it's partially maybe because I studied history. And I am really interested in thinking about how narratives are formed and how they could be formed. Like the idea of storytelling is really interesting to me. But that goes into, you know, current day marketing methods, and I'm very interested in that too. So I support the Guggenheim. I'm very happy to be a part of the institution. I think that in terms of New York museum programming, the Guggenheim has also always been one of my favorites. I think it's just such a special space for artists to work in. I really like special spaces, architectural spaces for artists to work in, because Ruck Bund is also a very special particular place. Space where I enjoy things that are site specific. I'm also involved with the Public Art Fund. I'm one of it's their equivalent of their Young Collectors Council. I also forget the name because it's something like,
well, it doesn't
something
matter.
That starts with an A. And most recently, I've become a founding global ambassador for LACMA.
Congratulations.
Just in the past few weeks.
And why? Tell me why.
Well, I don't know LA very well. I think it's a fascinating city. And I've been very interested in, as I mentioned to you, in how LACMA is thinking globally around what they've been doing with the Hughes Museum, how LACMA has a presence across the world, even though it is located in LA. And so I'm interested in learning more from the museum. I think Michael is incredible, and I think they have a really fantastic team. I really loved getting to know and working with Celia. And I thought that the Global Ambassador Program was quite interesting too, and it's very international, and it's really around curating a small group of people that have different ideas, that have different experiences, to come together and share what they feel to be important for the institution.
But in your case, you also want to be directly involved. It's not just about giving money,
yes.
I assume. And
yes.
So do you see a place like LACMA where you can actually have a real role, make a difference?
Well, we'll see. I just started, but I think, rather than wanting to get involved, I think my attitude's more that I want to learn and be helpful when I can. So I may have ideas for what I feel like would be good, but for somewhere like LACMA, I think I'm still starting to learn the institution, learn how it works, learn what is different, what is the same as other institutions I've been a part of. And that journey I find very exciting. I think I'm too new to be able to say like, hey, like I think you should do some things this way, when I don't really know how things work yet. So it's my attitude around patronage, especially outside of Ruck Bund Art Museum, I think is also around learning and how I can become a better supporter of the arts and a better patron.
Yeah. It sounds fantastic, but I'm convinced that you're gonna make a big contribution with ideas, give them ideas that will help them that they're not thinking about. They need your input, I think.
No, I think it's really a collaborative conversation.
That's the way it should be.
Yes. And I I really don't think I'm such a creative person. I really just feel lucky to have voices around me that I find inspiring, and you know, there are things that I'm interested in and excited about that I like to push forth with. But oftentimes I don't feel like I'm the person that comes up with the idea as much as I collect ideas that I see around me and consolidate them in some ways that ends up being a newer thing.
That's also creative. Yeah. Well, Audrey, thank you so much for coming and talking to me today, and I enjoyed it very much.
I look forward to following
your path in the future.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Be sure to check out our latest podcast and subscribe to Giving Back is Dead.